Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome back to the Clips Nation podcast. I'm your host, Sabrina Merchant, and thank you so much for tuning back in before the start of the playoffs. A quick programming note, there will be a Clips Nation fan forum on the Locker Room app at 3 p.m. Pacific on Friday. We'll be talking about the end of the regular season and previewing the playoffs. If you have any questions about how to join, head over to clipsnation.com to find all the info you'll need. On the podcast today, we have a really great show. Kirk Henderson of Mavs Moneyball came on to talk about the first-round matchup between the Mavericks and the Clippers. A lot of juicy storylines at play, so I hope you enjoy that conversation. The frequency of the podcast will be picking up a little bit during the postseason. It's a super exciting time of year. We hope you stick around for all of it. But first, here is Kirk.
We're joining you today, and if you're hearing my voice on Sabrina's feed, it's because we decided to record one podcast and then share between us. And we wanted to talk a little bit about this Mavericks-Clippers, round two, essentially. They met for the first time last year in the bubble. The Mavericks seemed set, like dead set on playing the Clippers from before the bubble even started. They went 3-5 and could have played another team if they wanted to. And then the Clippers came into Orlando and then proceeded to have sort of they played the Mavericks pretty well. You'd think the Mavericks got them ready. They went on to play Denver and then had sort of a kind of infamous collapse. But a year later, different coach, a lot of the same guys on both teams. And I'm sort of expecting early 2000s, it's going to be testy by game two. I don't care how friendly these guys all are.
Yeah, I was going to say by game one, because we had an ejection in game one of last year's series, and that was before these guys even figured out they didn't like each other. So, Kristaps Porzingis is still here. Marcus Morris is still here. Luka Doncic is still here. Like you said, there's been some significant changes on the Clippers end of things, but the starters are still the same, and there is a lot of, I'm not going to say bad blood, but some level of acrimony, I would say, between these two teams.
I think so. The biggest difference between the two has to be the collective health between both teams, because the Clippers went into the playoffs last year with a couple of guys dinged up. The Mavericks were playing 6.5 guys. Trey Burke came out of nowhere to matter and then secured himself a 3-year contract when he was on his way out of the league just because he decided to start cooking for two games. But now it's the Mavericks have a slightly deeper roster. If I'm remembering correctly, Patrick Beverley's coming back from some injuries, and the Clippers just have a deep roster, a lot of people to throw out. So how have the injuries affected the Clippers, and what do you feel is really different about this team compared to the same point, starting the playoffs last year?
Yeah, so I think you brought up the first one, which is that they're much healthier. I'd mentioned that the starters are the same as last year, but that's not entirely true, because Patrick Beverley hurt his calf in game one of the playoffs last year and then was unavailable for the rest of the Mavericks series. And you could really see his absence at the point of attack. They were starting Landry Shamet, a little bit of Reggie Jackson in there. Neither of those options were ideal, let's say, against Luka Doncic. So now you've got a healthier Patrick Beverley, who, even though he is returning from surgery, it was hand surgery, so I'm much more confident in his wind altogether because it wasn't a lower body injury.
Mm.
And then you've got, a healthy Rajon Rondo backing him up at point guard, who for all of the talk that there is about Rajon Rondo, much better defensive option than Reggie Jackson, I would say, in the playoffs.
Sure.
Definitely better than Landry Shamet. Everybody else is pretty much running into form. The one exception is that Amir Coffey was in the protocol for the last 2 weeks. He's probably not going to play in the playoffs. I just figured I'd mention his name because I thoroughly enjoy watching Amir Coffey play, and it would be disingenuous to say that everyone was healthy when he hasn't played in 2 weeks.
Sure.
But yeah, Serge Ibaka is back. You know, he played 2 games, probably the 2 worst Clipper games of the season based on how, you know, they approached the Houston and Oklahoma City games to end the season. But he looks good. You know, he provides that extra pick and pop ability that no other Clipper centers really do. He was moving better than you'd expect, considering he was sat out for 2 months with a pinched nerve. Basically, from the last time the Clippers played Dallas in that that 2-game set in Dallas was when Serge Ibaka left the lineup, and he didn't return until just now. So it's really great to have everybody back and healthy. Like we mentioned last year, you know, it wasn't just Patrick Beverley. Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams were also actually, you know what? I don't want to spend too much time talking about Lou Williams. The Clippers are healthy now.
Sure.
They have a much more different, like, bench unit that's, I think, much more capable of handling the Mavericks, because Batum, Ibaka, Rondo, like Reggie Jackson, that's a more quality four than what they were dealing with last year, when Doc Rivers literally said that he wasn't sure who he could put into the games because he didn't think anyone was, like, well-conditioned enough to play.
Man, speaking of Doc Rivers, what has been the biggest difference about the coaching this year with Theron Liu compared to Doc?
First of all, I would say just a general flexibility. There have been like these 10 game intervals throughout the season where Ty Lue will try out like a certain rotation, whether that's, you know, playing Luke Kennard a little bit more or more Terrence Mann and Reggie Jackson. That kind of went away at the end of the season when the Clippers just literally didn't have enough bodies to make those kinds of adjustments. But there has been a willingness to make adjustments that was not exactly a Doc Rivers hallmark. Now, how much of that was within Rivers' control? Because like he said, he didn't have the ability to play all these players. I'm not sure I agree with any of that, but that's his story. He'll stick with it. It's fine. a real flexibility in terms of how the Clippers approach the game. Like, they don't just throw the same coverages at, you know, opposing offenses all the time. They'll adapt, and like if something doesn't work in the first half, they'll try something different in the second half. And then I just think there's more flow on offense. You know, the Clippers obviously have two of the more talented isolation players in the league, in Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, the latter more so than the former. And it can be quite tempting to just get the ball in their hands and let them work, because it is very effective, but it also requires a lot of effort on their parts. And considering the defensive responsibility that the two of those players, you know, bear for this team, it makes their lives a lot easier when the Clippers can get them to their spots without forcing them to, you know, do all of the work, whether that's, you know, Rondo directing the offense, running a little more early offense, just the general motion that's in the half court. You know, the Clippers, I know we talked about this last year, like via messaging or whatever, but the Mavericks had the number one offense in league history last year. And what, 6 offenses beat that this year? Including
this year, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Clippers, gosh, I think, are the 3rd best shooting team of all time. You know, their corner 3-point percentage is just freaking absurd, and they create like 11% of their shots from there. It's a damn good offense. It looks prettier than it did last year. So I think, yeah, just that general flow and then a willingness to change things mid-game is really what has set Ty Lue apart from Doc Rivers. Admittedly, the personnel has something to do with that, you know, but I do think that there is a general feel that's different.
And it's, you know, Mavs fans that I've talked to are really excited about the storyline component of what this game is. You know, playing the same team again, mm-hmm. Rajon Rondo being in the back of things,
because
Mavs fans have a 6-year-old history with Rondo and Rick Carlisle, and Carlisle's gone out of his way to praise Rondo to the point to where it's almost awkward. But the X's and O's stuff for this series, I'm very interested to see how it goes, because on paper, the Mavericks simply cannot defend the Clippers. They simply cannot do it. We talked about injuries where, you know, the Clippers coming back from injuries earlier. Maxi Kleba, who did, as you know, he didn't really bother Kawhi in the playoffs. Drove me nuts when I saw Mavs fans talking about how good a job he did. No, he didn't. But he's a big guy. No, but he's a big body who can at least stick with Kawhi. It's not like he was getting open looks. Kawhi's just an unbelievable basketball player who is able to hit some of the toughest shots in the NBA. But past, he's been dealing with an Achilles injury, and at the moment, I don't think he's going to play. Because and if he does, and I could be wrong on this, so we'll see, obviously, by Saturday. But if he doesn't play, that causes just a cascade of problems for the Mavericks defensively against the Clippers offense, because the Dallas defense has not been good this year. Bobby Corral, who is a kind of do-it-all guy for the Mavs media team, loves to tell me that they have good rules, which makes me laugh, because I'm like, what team has bad rules? They don't play about?
The Kings have bad rules, Kirk.
Kings have very bad rules, but the Mavericks also lost three times in 15 days to the Kings. So this is the sort of thing that I'm talking about in terms of offense, not being able to stop anyone, because Porzingis has been this. I get killed for this. I'm the Anthony Irwin of Mavericks Twitter, because I have a take that people don't like to hear about a formerly good player. Kristaps cannot move. His athleticism has curbed, and from what he's gone from being a unicorn to being a horse, and it's just not enough. And I don't see where their scheme is able to stop the Clippers. Now, I do think what we're in for schematically then is like some real, like 125 to 120 kind of games. It'll be really entertaining. Probably some real runs, because that was kind of the case last year, where game four was out of reach. And then the Mavericks just started scoring a bunch of points. And then, you know, Luka hit the crazy shot. So there's but the storylines are a lot of fun, but I think that the schematic stuff is going to overtake that in a hurry, because whoever is able to come up with the adjustments faster and kind of realize what's happening faster might get an early kind of advantage in these first two games in LA.
Yeah, I find that offensive prediction quite interesting, because admittedly that is how this series went last year, but and I agree with all the numbers that suggest that Dallas cannot stop the Clippers, and yet during the regular season, they did a pretty good job of it. Now, I'm not going to count the first game as much because Kawhi wasn't playing, and I'm just of the belief that I'm never going to see another game like that.
But we won't. That was historical. A 50-point lead at halftime is something I've never seen before.
I don't understand how you can score enough points to make that happen.
And just keep hitting shots, because at some point teams pull up, and I've seen this happen numerous times this year where it's, oh, you're up by 18. This game's going to go easy. And then, 4 minutes later, an 18-point lead is gone. So it's just shocking that one kept going.
Right. So if we just focus on the two games in Dallas, I did think that the Mavericks did a pretty decent job of stopping the Clippers, especially in that second game where I want to say they were held under 90 points. I don't have the score directly in front of me. I probably should have. But for whatever reason, like, my expectations of just offensive fireworks did not hold in that regular season set. But that kind of also was the case last year, where the three regular season games were fairly defensive, and then the doors just blew off in the playoffs. So by the numbers, I think I would agree with you that, these offenses are just super high powered and are going to have their way. But I was pretty impressed with, honestly, both defenses' abilities to hold the other team in check during that two game set in Dallas, which is such a small sample. Like, I hate basing my information off of that, because it was two games, one after the other, both without Patrick Beverley and Serge Ibaka. So I don't know how different the Clippers are going to look. And, that's even before the Rajon Rondo trade. So that changes the Clippers rotation even more. But like, that was the best the Clippers had looked at defending the Mavericks. Luka sort of got his, but nobody else was really able to get going. I don't know if that was just like a bad stretch for Dallas offensively during the season. You can tell me if they're playing better now offensively. I question that, because like, they barely beat the Raptors to end the season. They lost to the Wolves. Like you mentioned, they lost to the Kings three times in 15 days. Like, are they in a good space now, relatively speaking, or would you rather the playoffs have started at a different point for Dallas?
So I'm very interested to see how the health impacts them, because by season's end, Luka was looking like a rag doll. He took a fall in the Memphis Grizzlies game.
Oh, that blowout.
Yeah, it was a blowout where he was chasing down like a loose ball and had to dive over this baseline table, and he landed on all concrete. And he wasn't hurt as much as he was. It just looked like he was not really the same. And also, like, from what I've been able to piece together, they had like a good timeout the night before in Memphis. Like, they've taken advantage of some of the lax of the COVID protocols and spent some time together. But on the court, the product was not good, because Luka's at that challenging stage in his career where he's so much better than everyone else he's playing with, and there's not a veteran on the team to kind of get things going. So he approaches games that aren't marquee games with lackluster effort. And sometimes the Mavericks escape and sometimes they don't. So, and really a lot of times they don't, because their record under with teams under 500, like the aforementioned Kings games, were really bad. So I think that if he's able to get some rest, and if Porzingis hasn't been dogging it because he hurt himself, he had like an ankle injury, and they're, you know, he's just one of these guys where biomechanics are important. And if he's not feeling right, he looks awful. Right. So if they're okay, I think that that could be a bit of a shock for the, because I'm sure the last 10 games of tape, the Mavs look terrible. They just had the second easiest schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of funny to say that they look terrible because, like you said, they raised in the standings during that stretch.
They kind of failed up. Like, yeah. Back to, you know, it's like you lose to the Minnesota Timberwolves in the last day of the year, and that game was over by the middle of the second quarter. Right. And it's just, I tell people, and on our podcast, that the folks who are listening have heard me say this over and over again, I don't know who this team is, because between the injuries and the closeness of the games paired with the fact that the first half of the season they went through, they're probably the second or third team in terms of most minutes and games lost to COVID protocols.
Gotcha.
And it's just, they've not had any level of consistency. They went 33-15 to close out the year, but they never had more than a 5-game win streak. So it's just kind of odd. And looking, I could see this really going multiple ways. So it's why, you know, sometimes the hedge is like, oh, it's going to be Clippers in 7 or Clippers in 6. I kind of get that, but I could see this. One fan described the team to me as having a low floor and a high ceiling. and that's where I feel, because they're just all over the place. And I think there could be some real, like, I'm kind of predicting at least one, like, absolute Clipper blowout where they just beat the Mavericks by like 35. Sure. That's just this sort of what happens.
Yeah. And we got one of those games last year in the playoffs, game 5, right?
Yes.
After it seemed like the momentum might be shifting, and the Clippers are like, nah. But the Mavericks are just so banked up last year. I remember coming into that series thinking that the Clippers pretty much had this handled, like they had done such a good job against Luka during the regular season. And then during the playoffs, maybe it's like what you were saying, how Luka just brings a different level on marquee games. Like, that's, I have to think a lot of that is his international background, because of all those single elimination games that they play in international competition. But he really just elevated his level to a degree that I was not expecting. And I'm kind of expecting that now.
It's last year's series, missing Dwight Powell and having a vertical element to their pick and roll game was very painful, because between
Willie Cauley-Stein didn't even come.
Well, yeah. And Willie Cauley-Stein is one of the most breathtaking athletes I've ever seen, who doesn't seem to know how to play basketball.
Hey, but it's something vertical.
Yes. And it's watching how the Clippers defend is so, because it's just a fleet of 6-7 people.
Yes.
And length is basically all that bothers Luka anymore. Strength doesn't, because there, you know, he and Kawhi had some great defensive, like, back and forths last year. I mean, maybe not Luka guarding him, but just some of the, you know, Kawhi's just such a physically strong player. Watching him guard most guys, like, it was kind of surprising to see Luka go toe to toe with him. And this year, where Luka has actually kind of looked a step slow all year, but where he has improved is he's somehow become a really top flight mid-range player. And he takes some very, like, early 90s shots on these isolations. It's a different game for him this year, even though he's scoring about the same. His three-pointers are better, but he can't get to the rim. This series is going to be, it's going to be a test of where he can kind of take his skills, because the Clippers exposed so many flaws in his game. And then he improved. But it's just like the Mavericks still have such a long way to go.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking up at his numbers, you know, in against the Clippers in the regular season, and like his efficiency is shocking. Like it's really, really good. And, for all of the great things about Luka, to me, like, efficiency is not the number one thing that comes to mind. Like,
me either.
He has the ball in his hands a lot. He's, you know, occupies a lot of volume, but, like, you know, he's shooting 37% on threes against the Clippers, like 83% on his free throws, like basically averaging a triple double against them. I mean, I know those are just like box score numbers, but it felt like that watching Luka play against the Clippers this year. And I have to imagine that they'll have a better defensive game plan against him because, like you said, you've got Kawhi, you've got Paul George, you've got Patrick Beverley starting off against him. You've got Nicholas Batum off the bench. You've got Rondo. I mean, even if they switch, Ivica Zubac laterally, not a bad option against Luka Doncic.
Really good. Really yeah, good. He probably guarded Luka better than any big in the league last year.
Yeah. And you mentioned that like Luka can't really get to the rim as much this year. I can't say that I've noticed that because I just, you know, don't watch Dallas obviously as much as you do. Sure. But when he does get to the rim against Zubac, like he is scared of shooting. Mm-hmm. So I honestly think that like that matchup in particular, I don't know how Ibaka is going to look in this series because it's been a while. He's only played two games and those were not real games.
Right.
Defensively at the start of the season, he was very good, but this is a different beast, right? Like Reggie Jackson was saying, like Luka's just like built like a tank, right? And like,
yes,
he has all of this skill that you wouldn't expect from someone of his size. And I don't know what Ibaka is going to look like, but I feel like if you can get 28 to 30 minutes of Zubac, like that's really a marked improvement from what they were getting last year because he's looked so good on the perimeter against him.
Mm-hmm. And then Zubac is just there taking advantage of the fact that the Mavericks are a pretty poor team rebounding right. group and was just able to get putbacks and dump offs. And it was driving me crazy just watching because they couldn't do anything about him. Not to wildly flip the script on you, but I just got sent this. This is from Hardwood Paroxysm. He said, Paul George, effective field goal percentage this season in heavily contested shots, 53.8. And lightly contested shots, 59.1. His effective field goal percentage against Dallas this season, heavily contested shots, 48.7. Lightly contested, 29%. The Mavericks aren't doing anything there. That's just George not hitting shots.
And again, that a lot of that I'm assuming includes the December 27th game.
Yeah, it has to. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just waiting for the shoe to drop on those numbers, and it did not disappoint.
Well, it's he's probably, in my opinion, he's the X factor for if Dallas is going to stay with the Clippers. If he plays poorly, and he didn't have a very good series last year entirely. He had one game where he shot 25%, just couldn't buy a bucket. He's such a skilled player, so it's very disconcerting when things just aren't going for him. And it's like he's like watching a guy stuck in quicksand. And if he comes ready to play, particularly the way Paul George looked in April, where he was just a killer. This might be a much shorter series than I'm anticipating.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that a key reason why that series went six last year was because the Paul George-Seth Curry matchup almost went in Seth's favor. And I don't know how much Dallas misses Seth, and I don't think he was doing much to guard PG. It just sort of happened that way. I don't know if he was getting in his head. There's obviously a lot of off-court stuff dealing with those two. But sure. Yeah, it's too bad. You know, all of those interpersonal dynamics are gone now that Seth and Doc Rivers are in Philadelphia.
I know.
Plenty remaining.
Yeah, we're substituting Rick Carlisle and Rondo. And then Luka made, I'm very curious as to your take on this. Luka Doncic told ESPN's Tim McMahon that, is it Marcus Morris? I guess I'm confused still. Marcus Morris reached out to Luka. I don't want to use the word apologize, but they apparently had a discussion about some of the extracurriculars in last year. And I've not seen anything to counter that, which leads me to my question. Do you believe that actually happened? Because I just don't see a Morris brother doing anything resembling an apology.
You know, I just can't imagine why Luka would say that if it didn't happen.
No, it had to have happened. It's just odd. Like it had such a wrestling vibe to it where it's just like these two dudes were going back and forth because Marcus Morris is a heck of a quote. Yes. Just outstanding stuff. Now, sometimes
I really wish they would give him to us more often.
because are you guys still doing mostly Zoom stuff? You guys can't see F. Man. Yeah. Gosh, he's such a good quote. And I hope we get regular availability from these guys in the playoffs because the sniping for this has the potential to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus prides himself on being a great teammate. You know, he says all of his stops and he was drafted in 2011. So in his 10 years in the league, everyone, you know, credits him for being a great teammate. And I'm sure part of that is taking responsibility for his actions. I do think that game five or game six when he's got ejected at the start? I think it was game six. That was a little unnecessary. I didn't think anything that he did with KP in game one was out of reach. But like, the stepping on someone like when they're falling, it's tricky. So I'm assuming he did reach out to Luka. I'm glad he did that because there's no reason for that to hang over this. You know, like Luka was very upset about that last year. What did he say? Like, I don't like playing with players like that in the game.
Yeah.
Right.
He's still young enough where he can get away with this. He speaks like four languages and he gets away with acting like he doesn't know as much English as he does. So sometimes he'll like chop it up and say, you know, like curt short phrases. And I'm just like, say what you mean, man. You listen to American hip hop. Don't play like you don't know English. And that's one of the few times he's been bothered by it. And, you know, but he's so passionate. And this year, mm-hmm. like the chances, I mean, I wonder if there's betting odds somewhere on like what on Luka getting ejected from a game, because he's led the league in him and Dwight Howard in technical fouls, or, you know, just from being disrespectful and being frustrated. And I've watched all 82 games and he deserved at least 13 of the 15 that he's gotten. Like, and so I wanted to see how that carries over to the playoffs, because he just sort of has this reputation, and you know, I can't, you know, is there anybody on the Clippers outside of Marcus Morris that is particularly
Beverly.
Okay, Beverly. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. He's a heck of a
It hasn't happened as much this year, but when the Clippers like were losing badly last year, it always ended in a parade of technicals, and the center of that was generally Patrick Beverly. And he was not playing for most of the year against Dallas, you know, in the series last year. So I do think that if anyone is going to get into it with Luka, it's going to be Pat. I mean, he even made some comments about Luka that were just totally unnecessary when they were playing Denver last year, mm-hmm. where he said that, you know, Jokic reminded him of Doncic because of
flailing his body around. Yeah,
yeah, that was a good. Like,
I remember that.
No one needs to say this right now. Like, it's just,
it's great because they share an agent. And they made a lot of emoji eyes at one another prior to him becoming a Clipper, where there was just like, oh, where's he going to sign? And a lot of Mavericks fans were thinking, oh, agent Bill Duffy. Oh, there's something there. And then he signed with the Clippers. Like, oh, okay, he wants to take the hometown discount. And then it just got so like angry, testy. It's great. I mean, we don't get enough basketball based testiness anymore. There's like a lot of, you know, off court stuff that happens in the NBA. It's not near. And some of that stuff like ranges on awkward. But when this stuff happens, when it's because of play, I love it. And I'm really looking forward to the discourse, because it's like this sports is, I always tell my fans, like, sports is one of the few things you can still get upset about and not get in any trouble for it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. So I'm really looking forward to this one. So we're coming up on about a half hour. Do you want to make any big predictions for the series?
I mean, I don't think this is like out of left field or anything. I feel pretty comfortable in the Clippers winning this. I mean, they arguably chose this matchup based on the way they finished the season. I don't think it had as much to do with the Mavericks as it had to do with the second round opponent.
Sure.
But, you know, they still put themselves in position to play Dallas as opposed to Portland. And I think, you know, for all we've talked about how Dallas has struggled and how they don't match up that well against the Clippers, I think they match up much better against the Clippers than Portland does. So, it's a choice to want to play a team that is going to test you in the first round. I don't think they're going to beat the Clippers, but I do think that they could make it five tough games, maybe six if something goes wrong, like, you know, a Luka shot did last year. But, yeah, I think Clippers in five seems like the safe pick, especially now that we're back, you know, in home arenas. You close out the game.
How many fans are allowed?
About 11%.
Okay. It's up to 50 in Dallas, and I would. Or 47. It's something very peculiar. 47%. It's very. It's very. I just saw the number, and Mark Cuban's been talking about it a lot.
So,
well, with Dallas and the Dallas in-game arena experience, like the Mavs fans. Because Dallas was good for such a long time, they went from being very loud to being very, let's just say, not as rowdy. So
that's a bummer.
It is. But, you know, maybe because people haven't been there in a year, they'll be excited and make up for the noise, which I can see that. Like, playoff stuff is fun. I'm wondering, I've just been very curious about whether home court actually is going to matter in these things. And that's a pretty stark difference in fan, you know, allotments. But, you know, we'll see.
For me, it's not so much the fans, it's just the not traveling, you know, you getting to in your own home, and like that just seems to make players a lot more comfortable when they're coming from home versus coming from a hotel. So that to me is what has driven like the home court advantage. I mean, obviously the numbers do not bear that out because this was the worst season for home court advantage in like league history. But I do think in the playoffs, it's going to make a difference, even if it's just like 11% of fans, because I got to tell you, being in the building for no fans versus that many, it's night and day.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the Mavs had a real problem with way too much fake noise.
Oh yeah. It's been so bad.
And that's almost worse than, you know, having like a crazy loud drunk lady behind you yelling. Like it's because it's just it's coming from everywhere instead of one direction. I guess I will probably like I've been kind of taking a similar approach. I'm going to get, you know, we're this far into the podcast. Anybody that listens to me talk this long has to actually like me as opposed to the people who yell at me on Twitter. So I'd probably say like Clippers in five makes sense. I'm going to go ahead and pick Clippers in six. Okay. Just because I think that if it is Clippers in five, the Mavericks will have it. It makes their offseason much like daunting in a way that I'm not looking forward to because it's like, wait, so you went through and you did all this again to get the exact same result, like literally the exact same result as last season. And that just like opens up an offseason of discourse that I am not particularly looking forward to because the Mavericks are in that point in their team kind of cycle where expectations are not, they're outpacing reality and it's making, you know, it's kind of making it less fun for fans because people are just kind of grumpy a lot.
Does it affect how Dallas views this series, like based on what the Clippers do afterwards? Like, did Dallas feel any worse about losing to the Clippers because the Clippers lost in the semifinals, or was that sort of like immaterial to the overall picture?
So game four, I think, kind of papered over a lot of problems with the team. And then they rolled back essentially the same guys. So that
Seth is, Josh Richardson trade.
Yeah, that was the big one. And if that's your big move, the way, you know, Josh Richardson's coming off the bench. So it's not exactly, it hasn't exactly panned out. So I would say that it bought them a little bit of time, but they've, when you go out and get Kristaps Porzingis and send away two first round picks, it tightens the window or rather the margin of error becomes smaller. And I think getting out of the first round is hard. Making it to the playoffs is hard. There's only eight teams in the second round and fans tend to forget this. So, you know, just getting to the playoffs and improving this sort of stuff, I think is probably a step forward, but it's just with the way that, you know, with the way the rookie contracts are scaled and guys, it makes it very difficult to have reasonable expectations because I think they're probably where they ought to be in the whole thing. It's just Luka tends to make, you know, discussions like this hard to have because he's in, you know, all NBA level talent. And if you're only getting knocked out of the first round, it feels like a failure in some respects. But I think this could be considered a successful season given the challenges, even if they get, you know, a gentleman swept.
Yeah. I mean, I've begun thinking of it as the Tim Hardaway Jr. trade, not the Porzingis trade.
You and me both.
I thoroughly enjoy watching Tim Hardaway Jr. play. And I think if Dallas scores at a rate higher than I'm expecting, it's going to be because of Hardaway. Like, I don't really see where else the offense is coming from.
Right. And he was actually... He was on JJ Redick's podcast today and talked about how he was not prepared for the physicality last year. And I wonder what that means for this year for him. Like, how do you prepare for physicality? It's just sort of a thing.
Maybe it's a mental thing. I don't know. JJ's not playing, right?
Redick is probably not playing. He keeps being coy about it, but he's dealing with like ankle issues the way Dirk was at the end, and he's just in pain a lot. And at what point is it worth it? So yeah, I think he'll just be a very loud clapper on the bench.
Yeah, there's no more fun JJ Clippers anecdotes to be had because nobody has left from the Lob City era.
Yeah.
Last. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, turns over quick.
It does.
That's about all I got. This has been fun. Thank you for taking time out of your day to talk.
Yeah, I'm glad to get, you know, a good perspective on Dallas because, I mean, the way I was coming in was just like, this is a better team than last year because, you know, of how they played the Clippers last year. And I presumably they're like on the next phase of their growth, so they should be better. But you have made me uncertain about that prediction.
Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways. I wouldn't be shocked by a 7-game series. I would be mad, but I would be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked about a 1-4 sweep. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this is great. So this has been Kirk Henderson and Sabrina with both of us are with SB Nation. You can find her. She does all the work. I'll post her Twitter feed. And, you know, you should go seek out some of the things she's been writing about the Clippers as well as her weekly column with Silver Screen and Roll. My friends over there. Do you got anything else before we get on out of here?
No, I just think it'd be great if we could, you know, do this again if this series somehow becomes more interesting than either of us expect.
Oh, I like that. We should absolutely do that. Well, thank you so much, Sabrina. We will we'll talk soon. And for everyone listening on the Clippers feed, this has been Kirk Henderson with Mavs Moneyball Podcast. So everyone go rate and subscribe to both of our feeds, and we will talk with you soon.